Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
The two Scotsmen are John Ballantyne and Gus Noble of the band Crazy Heart. I'm assuming, gentlemen, that the other members of the band are from other places. I've never met. Having two Scotsmen in here is something for me. I'm not sure I've ever met five Scottish people in my life in Chicago. We'll get to that in a while. They are performing. They perform all over the place, but one of their seminal performances is called Chicago 1971, which is going to be at the Old Town School of Folk Music on March 15th, and it concerns the relationship that was born at a place called The Quiet Night between Kris Kristofferson, who at the time, 1971, was pretty famous, he was becoming pretty famous, and Steve Goodman, who was like a little kid, and John Prine, who was just a former mailman from Maywood, who was just starting to write songs. How did you two, either one of you can talk, or talk over each other, how did you first come upon, it's such a great story.
Yeah, the remarkable thing, I'm glad you mentioned, we're from Scotland, because
well, when Gus talks, people will be able to tell.
Right,
you don't have that. You've lost the accent.
Right, and there's a reason for that too. You know, maybe for fun, at some later point in the interview, I'll drop into my
local. We'd love to hear that. Yeah,
I'll see if
we
can do that. So Gus and I, growing up in Scotland, we never met in Scotland. Actually, Gus went to university with my younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through my brother that I got to know Gus. We first met here in Chicago, and we start comparing notes, and it becomes clear we have this reverence for John Prine.
Let me ask each of you separately. How did you, John Ballantyne, first come to music? I mean, obviously, you were born and raised in Scotland. Mm. When did you first pick up a guitar, or when did you first say, I'm going to be a musician? How did that come to you?
It's an interesting, it's a great, thank you for asking that question, because
that's what I'm supposed to do. I want to know.
Here's the thing, right? So growing up in Scotland at that time, and this is quite a while ago now, but
a long time ago,
the pubs, the bars,
yeah,
closed at 9 p.m.
Oh my God.
Right?
Yeah.
So how can you survive with something like that?
I couldn't agree more.
So what they would do, like my parents would bring home half the pub, half the bar, to the house on like a Friday or Saturday night, and they would buy their booze and bring it and
sure.
Have a house party, and I would be sent. I was, you know, sent away to bed upstairs, but I could still
hear. You could hear.
I could still hear what they were doing. So I heard this music just kind of vibrating throughout the whole house, and there was something about it and the fun that they were clearly having that made me think, as a little guy, I was 8-9 years old or something, I was like, I'd like to do that.
Wow.
You know,
Gus, what about you?
When John and I met in Chicago, we figured the most logical thing two Scots in Chicago could do is form a honky-tonk band.
Yes, that's logical being the operative word there. Yeah.
John comes from the west coast of Scotland, and I come from the east coast. We're all the pretty, good-looking people.
Technically, we shouldn't even speak.
Exactly. But, yeah. We both discovered that we like golf. And went to play golf a couple of times, and quickly discovered that we were no good at golf. But by the time we played, we figured, you know, we both like John Prine, so let's put together this band. And we did. I met John on the day that Les Paul died.
Yeah.
To come to a pub in Chicago, and he said, "I've got a story to tell you." And I said, "Okay, tell me." And he said, "Well, I had a heart attack. And I was whisked away from my home in a helicopter in Lake Erie Hills. And I decided in the helicopter, if I survive this, I'm going to do something that makes me happy." And my younger brother, with whom I used to play in a band at university, said he really enjoyed playing music with you. So what do you say? Let's form a band and play some John Prine songs.
Wow.
15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Is that the seed of Crazy Heart? I mean, Crazy Heart is not like a John Prine cover band. I mean, no. You will do John Prine songs, and it's different exactly from the Chicago 1971 thing. John, you play the guitar. What else?
I do a lot of talking in the 1971 show, which strangely...
The 1971 show, let me tell you, I have not seen it, but it seems to me to be not just a musical event. It seems to me to be a musical theatrical event that combines images and stories. And you said that Richard Harding's daughter sometimes gets up and tells a story. When did it occur to you two guys? And you joined Crazy Heart like 15 years ago. What do you play?
I play the bass guitar.
Okay. And you talk with an accent. That's a novelty for people. I mean, you don't meet a lot of Scotsmen around here. What exactly, first of all, John, what drew you to Chicago in the first place?
Oh, it was a work thing. I mean, I was married, young kids, had all of that going on. I hadn't played music for some years. I played a lot when I was very young.
Yeah.
And that all went south because of what I told you earlier.
Yes.
You know, I decided I liked all the stuff that went along with playing music a little too much. Got over that and got married, kids. And it was, I was working for an American company in Scotland. At the time, they were called Foxborough, Massachusetts. And just randomly, there was a position came up in Chicago. And, you know, somebody said, John, you could do it. Why don't you? I wasn't even looking at it, but somebody said, you could do that. And that was enough for me to say, well, all right. So I filled out the thing, sent it away. And
next thing you know, you're living in northwest suburbs.
2 weeks later.
Wow.
That was
How long ago was that?
That was in the 90s, like 94 or
94
or something like that. You know.
And Gus, what brought you here?
It's either love or
money.
John's case.
Money and the, you're right. It is either love or money.
I was living, and by the way, I run a not-for-profit now, so I never did find one. But I was living in Edinburgh above a pub.
Sure.
And it was during the Edinburgh Festival. I played with John's younger brother in a Chicago Blues Band in Scotland, and somebody had sent me a T-shirt from the Chicago Blues Festival, and I went downstairs from my apartment down to the pub. And there was, in this very traditional Edinburgh pub, an American night. It was billed as an American night. But when I went there was nothing to indicate that it was but for selling hot dogs. And I said to the barman, what's this American night? And they said, we just ordered far too much Budweiser and we're trying to shift it to So in walks this group from Chicago, and they happened to be a group of actors there for the end of the
Sure.
They see my T-shirt, and they said, what do you make of this American night? And they had eyes met across the smoky bar kind of thing. And a few months later, I knocked on our door here and said, I'm here for a visit. And 32 years later, I'm still here.
You're still together?
No.
Oh, you're not together.
I lasted about a week.
You're not together. Lasted a week? Yeah, okay. Well, she was an actress, for God's sake. She was an actress, for God's sake. So how exactly did you two, I know the relationship with the brother and all that stuff, but did you look him up? Or?
His brother said to me, my older brother John is moving to Chicago, you should get to know him. We played golf a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Lost touch. John was out in, you know, the back of beyond.
Yeah, sure.
And when he called me up and said, come to this pub, I have this story to tell you about the heart attack, and he proposed that we form a band, and that's where Crazy Heart was born.
Wow. What was it? Do you remember what the bar was where you met?
It was the Map Room.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I remember the Map Room. Sure.
So John lived in Philadelphia for a while and bought a Gibson Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Useful guitar with an ebony fingerboard in the 1960s. And he gave it to his younger brother. And that's the guitar he played in the blues band.
Yeah.
When John gave up music, he gave this guitar to him. And it became like this iconic instrument.
Oh, sure.
In his hands, it was defined as a wonderful band. Years later, I moved to Chicago, met John, didn't see him for a while. And when he asked me to come back to this pub, when he survived the heart attack,
yeah,
my brother gave him back the guitar. So he walked up on stage to play with this group of musicians, put a guitar over his shoulder, and I looked at him and went, oh my God, here I am, the Atlantic Ocean, an older brother, and 20 years away from that other band, but the same physical guitars in the band.
Well, that's a great story. That is a great story. When did you formally form Crazy Heart then? Shortly thereafter?
Yeah, it took a couple of years of try this, try that.
And one of the other things, I think, you know, both of you had professions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, okay, we're going to give up our families and give up everything we do to make music. You understood that you can make music when you want to make music.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Any in the Chicago 1971, I'm calling it a musical theatrical extravaganza, which I think it really is. I mean, there's stories. You were telling basically the story of the night that these three seminal and unbelievably talented songwriters met and got to know each other and really affected. Stevie died really early, but really, really got to affect each other's lives. When did you, two of you, I suppose, and the other members of the band, when did you get the notion of doing this?
It would probably have been 3 or 4 years before John died.
Yeah, which is about 6 or 7 years ago.
Right. And I had always loved the story, particularly the Steve Goodman. Here's Steve, a young guy playing around town. He gets a chance to open for Kristofferson.
Yeah.
And you would think that he would push his own songs on Kristofferson. He did. A little, but more importantly, he pushed his pal, John Prine.
Yeah.
And that's a great human aspect of a story, and I always thought that was great.
Well, I think they, you know, knowing them both a little bit, I mean, they were both unbelievably giving. They were not, you got to have some ego to want to get up on stage and sing your own songs, but it was all a matter of helping one another, which is kind of one of the basic tenets of the folk music scene. Kristofferson did help them, did he not?
Absolutely. So they dragged Kristofferson across town to hear John, you know, and the quote I have, is that Kristofferson patiently listened to John do like 6 or 7 songs, probably in the main part of his first album.
Oh, sure.
And what he's supposedly said is, could you play those again? And anything else you've written. You know? So he's blown away.
I'll bet he was.
The amazing thing is that Steve Goodman had asked if he could play some of his songs.
Sure.
Kristofferson said, your songs are fantastic. I'm going to fly you to New York and make you a star.
Right, right.
And he said, let's go and listen to my buddy John Prine.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, he said, your songs are fantastic. I'm going to fly you both to New York and make you stars. And he did. Within a few days, they were playing at the Bitter End.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
To say that this is a show about the power of kindness.
Oh, yep.
Forward. You know, we say at the end, towards the end of the show, I take a moment and say, look, this life, in the words of John Prine, is a hard way to go. So let's take a leaf out of the tree of forgiveness.
And Kristofferson was no minor shakes as a songwriter either. Brilliant songwriter, Rhodes Scholar, and brilliant songwriter.
You know, the interesting thing is we observe, or John tells the story better than me, but without Johnny Cash, we wouldn't have Chris Kristofferson.
Mm-hmm.
Without Chris Kristofferson, we wouldn't have John Prine.
Right.
And Johnny Cash was very proud of his family's roots in Scotland. So you get where I'm going here. Without Scotland, you don't get Johnny Cash. You don't get Chris Kristofferson. So on behalf of Scotland, all the John Prine fans,
You're welcome. It's no bother.
Yeah, but didn't you guys invent golf too?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's beyond the pale. That's ridiculous. You've driven many people into a madhouse where they could listen to John Prine and cure themselves and feel better about it. What's been the response when you don't play this? You don't do this Chicago 1971 often. Not often enough, I think, for my team. You have other lives and jobs and stuff. Right. But when you have done it, as you were doing March 15th at the Old Town School of Folk Music, the response from the crowd must be astonishing, because there are few people in the history of Chicago more beloved than Steve Goodman and John Prine, maybe Minnie Minoso, Ernie Banks. They're not musicians.
You know, I remember listening to John tell some of these stories as he introduced some of the
songs.
And I'm standing behind him on stage, and I looked out, and the audience were really paying attention, really tuned in. So John said, you know, there might be something here, and that's where we really began to develop this show. But the response has continued to be incredible. We were just in Mexico playing down in San Miguel, where it played to some really incredibles. And the Old Town School of Folk Music is so associated, or John Prine is.
Oh, sure.
We learned the craft.
Yep.
We couldn't be more delighted, happy, or proud that we're going to be playing there. We've developed some really good friendships at the Old Town School.
Yeah, there are remarkable people there. It's had some bureaucratic ups and downs in its day. I remember when it opened at an Armitage, for God's sake, way back, which is where I should have taken guitar lessons. You could have been Chicago 1971. Rick Cogan walked into the bar and fell down and broke his guitar. Now, I am so taken with this. I am also, ladies and gentlemen, going to be writing about what this Chicago 1971 and these two gentlemen and the rest of the Crazy Heart group for the Chicago Tribune. It'll be in on Saturday, March 8th, but it'll run online as things do a few days before that. So look for that too, because I'm quite taken. It's my understanding in San Miguel you met Steve Coates and Sharon Barrett, two of the great Chicagoans of my life, certainly.
What a pleasure that was.
You liked them, eh?
Yeah, we'd been in touch by email, and they said they were going to come. And it was the first night, and we're doing our thing. We're kind of halfway through it, and something made me think, oh, I have to look for Rick's pals here. And before I could, you know, ask who it was, they came bounding up. We're friends with Rick Cogan. They were loving it. They are
lovely people. I knew. I mean, I just know we had not met. I talked to you a couple times on the phone, but I just knew that was going to be a match made in heaven.
Yes.
And they're down there for another time. And I hear that place is where you guys are hooked and love it, right?
Yes. There's a lot of Chicago people down there. A lot of Americans,
sure.
It's a big Chicago contingent. There's a lot of music. The music scene in the town is incredible. Local people and people who have traveled and moved there. Wouldn't you say, Gus, the standard of musicianship and entertainment, and there's everything else, acting.
Exactly, food and
kind
everything.
Of art,
Chicago 1971 on March 15th. At the Old Town School, you can go to oldtownschool.org to get more information and buy tickets, and maybe they'll add another show or do something with that. Who else plays with you guys? Who else are part of the Crazy Heart Band?
Okay, well, Gus on bass. We have two gals singing harmony. Mm-hmm. One of them plays ukulele.
Oh, nice.
Their harmonies are awesome. That's Heather Comer, Karen Samada. Karen grew up in Brian's hometown in Maywood. Then we have Leslie Wall Santos on drums. He's a Chicago guy.
Uh-huh.
We have a couple different guitar players come and go. They're kind of hired guns. But we have Mike Fleming, excellent guitar player. Then we have a fellow called Gabriel Stutz who plays pedal steel.
Wow,
top notch.
So, and this is. I mean, we don't want to. This is not you're not exactly what I would call a cover band, though you do play the work of find better Kris Kristofferson, John Prine, Steve Goodman. It's a theatrical event with music. There are use videos.
We have video
photographs.
We have visual
stories.
It's very much a storytelling.
Yeah.
I told you I talk too much in the show. But
I don't know. I'm telling you, John, I don't know if you could talk too much in a show like this because no one's out there doing, no one in Vegas is doing, hey, come see the John Prine imitator here.
I hope not. No.
Yeah, that would be.
The whole driving force behind the show was to tell the stories. The stories behind the songs, the stories about the characters. I mean, how, for example, Steve Goodman came to write City of New Orleans. He was nowhere near New Orleans. he got on the train, went to Kankakee or something with his wife. But on the ride down, he penned that song.
Yeah.
And the Kristofferson stuff, I mean, that's some of the best songwriting that's ever been done.
No question.
He studied romantic poets.
He was a Rhodes Scholar. He was an army brat, right? Yes. His father was in the army, a very severe kind of character.
Absolutely.
And it resurrects just a time of unbelievable creative freedom. Well, and all of these guys, none of these guys died of heroin overdoses.
I wanted to ask you, you were there when Otis was young.
Yeah, I was a little young to have been an active participant on it. I've one of the great joys of my life is my friendship with Bonnie Kolak, who was at the center of that whole thing, and knowing Earl and knowing Dick Harding. But it came after the... Because I'm telling you, I'm afraid I probably would have been seduced by the entire scene and be playing some lousy guitar sitting on a street corner somewhere now. But when you select song, and I'm sure the show is organic in that way, that it changes every time you put it on. That something becomes more important to you or less important or... because everything I have heard, a few people who have seen it think it's magnificent. And it's also not some kind of, the other thing it is not, is some kind of nostalgia trip.
Exactly.
Not at all. Yes, it's 1971, but so what?
These songs, like the best poetry in the world, Robert Burns and Langston Hughes, they have resonance and they kind of reveal themselves to you in the circumstance, in the moment. And certainly some of the songs that we may play tonight, and including the show, we swap them in and out according to what's going on.
Sure.
In our lives and what we
well, because you're dealing, with a live audience, and you guys seem, certainly polished professionals who will play the audience. The audience is not just simply an audience. It's a collaborator in a way.
It's absolutely, I couldn't say that better.
Okay.
It's about what we can achieve together with the audience. And that comes through. The people get into it, and very often at their break or something, people will come up and they want to tell me their story about when they were at the quiet night.
I'll never forget. It was snowing, and I was standing on Weld Street, New Year's Eve at the Earl of Old Town. That's great, because one thing, it will evoke for people wonderful memories.
Yes.
It will not provoke nightmares. But it will also, I hope I can go, but I also hope that in the audience are younger people who are like, wow, I've never heard of Steve Goodman. I've never heard of Kris Kristofferson. I've never heard of John Prine.
Yep.
Now I want to devour everything they've ever written. My two friends, John Ballantyne and Gus Noble of Crazy Heart, but more to the point of Chicago 1971, a remarkable music, theater, visual show. An emotional show, I would have to say. That will be March 15th at the Old Town School. You're also playing the Woodstock Opera House. When's that, in April?
April 26th. We'll be up in where I live, actually, up there. So the Woodstock Opera House, April 26th.
That's a beautiful place, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been there.
There's one other I want to mention, the Friday before the Old Town. The Friday the 13th, as luck would not have it, will be in St. Charles at the Moonlight Theater. And you can go to moonlighttheater.com or whatever.
Go to crazyheartmusic.com. That will give you a lot of information. Do you always close with some special number, or it varies?
We've been closing with Illegal Smile, and we have so much fun with it because we found a way to get the audience singing along in
the
chorus, and they love to do that. And it's just a great, fun song, and it means different things to different people, but I don't know anybody that doesn't like it.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. No kidding. And you started doing this when John started to get sick, when his cancer sort of flared up and eventually took his life. A remarkable guy. There's a documentary, you know, about John coming out soon. I'll mention that in the story when I do it. I can't remember exactly when.
We were there that night when it was, or the concert that was filmed.
In the suburbs?
In the school?
Yeah. Oh, no, when he went back to Proviso East High School. Yeah. Wow, yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. When's your next trip to Mexico, fellas?
Oh, it'll probably be next February. Once a year is about all we can afford. But if I can...
There's a band going out, paying their own way, paying hotels, paying for the love of playing, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a great trip for us.
Yeah.
We come close to breaking even, which is a huge victory. You know, that's these days, that is fantastic. And so next February, but if I can have my way, I'll be back pretty soon just to kind of hang around because I just love that town.
Well, if Steve and Sharon move there, Steve Coates and Sharon Barron move to San Miguel Allende, I'm sure with the relationship growing the way it has, they'll get an extra room for you guys to stay. Now, since you don't perform with any great regularity, you got a three things coming up. It must be a real joy for you guys to get on stage.
Love it. And more so the subject matter. I mean, the fact of the matter, Gus and I for sure are lifelong fans of these three guys. And to get the chance to kind of share our love for that music with the people who were around at the time is just the greatest. It's the greatest thing. I have to pinch myself every time we get to do this.
Have you guys done any recording? I mean, it's Crazy Heart. Even you got a CD out there?
We made a CD in like 2014, and it wasn't released. It kind of escaped, if you know. It wasn't the greatest thing, but what we're playing here tonight is some recordings from our 1971 show, which we had professionally rendered. You know, professionally done. We're very proud of them, actually.
Yeah, but you got to pay royalties on these songs, don't you?
If you want to use them to make money, I think.
I think John's wife is still around. They should give you
Fiona. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
I think John's first wife, haven't
you? Oh yes, Ann Carol Menalashino Prine, his high school sweetheart. We became friends on Facebook, and I have to say she has been so helpful. I don't like to bother her too much.
Yeah, sure.
But I can send her a little question here and there because she was with John that night when Christofferson heard
him. I'm sure she was. Sure.
She sat beside Christofferson. I have some firsthand information about that night, and I do want to remind the fella on Facebook who gets on my case every time I say it wasn't Angela Lansbury, because Ann Carroll told me that it wasn't.
Debate about who the woman was.
I know. But, you know, whatever, they're both beautiful actresses, and whichever one it was, that's great.
Samantha Eger or Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, pick one. It's okay.
I'll try to dig up, see who might have been in town at the time.
Right.
I think that's funny. Ed Holstein used to tell a very funny story about the night that you couldn't get in the glory days, you couldn't even get in the Earl of Old Town, but the night that Vincent Price of horror movie fame... came there. Yeah, he tells an amazing story. Eddie's still around. I think he's still in pretty good health. But
good.
It was a wild time. And Bonnie and her husband Bob live out in Iowa, and she performs every once in a while. I'm going to talk to her about this show.
That would be awesome.
Well, you Scottish fellows, thank you. This has been a fascinating hour, and I'm all for what you're doing, and we'll try to spread the word. And
it's really kind of you to have us.
It's not kind at all. I mean, this is St. Baldrick's or something. I mean, there's charity, and then there's the thing. There's entertainment, and if it informs a little bit, that's even better, fellas. So it's great to meet you face to face too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And carry on. March 15th. You can go to oldtownschool.org. That'll do it. You can go to crazyheartmusic.com. Or just look up Chicago 1971.
There is a separate website for the show. It's Chicago1971.com.
Wow. That's pretty...
I probably should have told you that before.
That's pretty high-tech for a folk guy, man. Pretty high-tech. Thank you, guys. Safe travels back home.